Kingdom Pursuits, where you hear from ordinary people instilled with an extraordinary passion. Together, we explore the stories of men and women who take what they love and let God turn their passion into kingdom pursuits. Now, live from the Truth Booth, your host, Robbie Dillmore.
Well, you'd think after that this would be Robbie Dillmore, but you'd be wrong. This is Bill Mixon. I got the wonderful opportunity to fill in for Robbie. Kingdom Pursuits topics include addiction, homelessness, mentally ill, ministries, prayer, prison, ministries, special needs. The talk show that shares how God imparts in each of us a unique part of His glory to reflect in the world. How does God take your passion and use it to help build God's kingdom? From our community to communities around the world, God has trusted His followers to help others. These are the things that we like to highlight on Kingdom Pursuits. I have some wonderful guests this morning, Kristen O'Leary with Phoenix Rising and Susan Stevens with Teal Drops, Tara Tucker with Forsyth EMS. And we are a call-in show, and we would love for you to call in and share how you've overcome your addiction. And I've got 30 years where I've been clean and sober. Call in and share your success stories. Call in and share about a recovery program that you're aware of or part of that's been a great success. Our call-in number is 336-896-0330 or 866-348-7884. 866-348-7884. Kristen, we've known each other for over 10 years, and I know you have a great heart for helping ladies in dire need and desperation, and that you have done a phenomenal job helping many hundreds, if not thousands, of ladies get a grip on their situations and improve it dramatically. And I'd love for you to share with us about the new program that you're working with.
Thank you, Bill. Good morning. The new program I'm working with, I'm on the board of directors of Phoenix Rising. We have a powerhouse leader, Carrie Sigler, who is an attorney who was successful in bringing back the drug court with Judge Fine this past year, 2017. And what they're seeing is how hard it is for their drug court clients to remain clean in an environment that isn't safe. So they have tasked me with putting together a business plan and doing something similar I did before with the Y, and having a house that's safe for them to go and recover. And the program itself is working really well. They just need a little bit of assistance as far as getting success with the length of the program and the clients having somewhere.
Thank you for all you do, and it's a wonderful show. We've got a caller. Brett has just called in. Brett, what would you like to share with us this morning?
Hey, good morning. Just a little story about my recovery. I am, as of this past June, 18 years sober.
Yay.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. I actually lived in Chicago and nearly drank myself to death. And I had a brother who was quite a believer and was the one who just wouldn't give up on me. Well, he made arrangements for me to attend Fellowship Hall here in Greensboro. And the day that I flew from Chicago out of Midway, I collapsed in line when I was checking into Southwest Airlines to fly to Raleigh. Long story short, I went to the ICU, got out, went through Fellowship Hall, really got to know Christ. It absolutely changed everything about me, everything. My life was worth something. I'm a father now. I haven't touched a drop of alcohol in 18 years. Couldn't be happier or more blessed. Just saying to anybody out there who's struggling, Jesus Christ is the only way. I've seen so many who have gone other routes and failed. So that's about all I have. But just a little of encouragement for anybody who might be struggling with addiction.
Brett, do you do any volunteer work, or do you help out in any way in any of the programs around you?
You know, I like to, I still attend AA, and I, as much as I can, I mentor other people, help other people who are struggling. I'll give talks from time to time and tell my story, because oftentimes that's a big help to people, because they realize that they're not alone. You know, so many have gone through it, and they see the victory that we have in Christ Jesus. He gives us that hope, I've seen people who have never gone through any struggle at all, like myself. I didn't ever relapse. I didn't ever want it, and I want to tell people that that's a possibility, and it's also a possibility that it's going to be difficult, but you can get through it. So yeah, I do like to share my story.
Brett, thank you so much for calling in.
My pleasure.
You will be in my prayers this week.
Yeah, absolutely, and thanks for what you guys.
You know, Kristen, I bet you were running about a 50% success rate in the last program you were working with.
That's a shame, Bill. It was 85.
85, which is unbelievable. Yeah, Cornerstone is part of our Samaritan ministry. It's a Bible-based recovery program for men. It's running about a 50% success rate. And there's help out there. I think part of the help is to be able to not look at your past with shame. And if we can do that, if we can share what we go through and we can talk about Christ, that we can help others. Yeah, people go through really difficult times in their life, and those difficult things can crush us or they can build us up. And Susan Stevens from Teal Drops has just an unbelievable story, and I'd like her to share a little bit now and a little bit in our next segment.
Hi, this is Susan Stevens, and I lost my daughter, Toria Stevens, this past January 22nd. She had been a rape victim and had PTSD, so 3.5 years she struggled, and it was a traumatic thing. She used prescriptions and eventually led to street drugs and eventually heroin, and overdosed 2 times, 2 days in a row. The first day they saved her, and the second day they couldn't. I kissed her goodbye, and I told her I would not let her die in vain. So here I am. I've started tealdrops.org, which is a nonprofit. You can look us up on your website, tealdrops.org. But we are a Christian organization that I've had many God moments in this, where when she was struggling actively in addiction, I went to a friend's and she was reading the Bible, and the story for the day in the Daily Bread was the story of Jesus' mother touching Jesus' shoulder. And Jesus turned to her, and she said, "My daughter, will you please heal my daughter?" And he said, "Your daughter is saved because of your faith." And the day I read that, I knew, even though she was in active addiction, that Jesus had her. And so he has led this journey for me. He confirmed my journey just 2 months after she died, when I was struggling with the name for the company, and I thought about teardrops.org because tears of pain, turning them to teals of joy, and the teal is the color of fresh new life in spring, and Jesus giving you new life when you are coming out of addiction and you change your life. That is a new life, and it's the color of spring. So he confirmed that when I walked into a consignment shop that I shouldn't have been in with no money, and someone bought me a necklace. And I got it home, and I turned it over to look at it, and it said Israel. And I started crying and shaking, and I felt the Holy Spirit. And he confirmed that the teal drop was what I was supposed to do. And so I just want to share those God moments.
Susan, we've got a question from Reggie. Reggie would like... we're going to hold Reggie until after the break. We've got a break, and we want to make sure that we give him plenty of time. You know, we can take difficult things that happen to us, and we can wrap ourselves up in shame, and we can feel bad for things that come, or we can grab hold and we can find a way to help others, and we can look back on our situation and understand that God loves us and accepts us even through the mistakes we make. And we've got a lot more in the show. We hope you stay tuned and you pray that others will tune in. And if you've got a story, give us a call. 866-986-0830. We're so glad you tuned in. We'd love for you to call in at 866-348-7884. We're talking about opioid addiction. We're talking about recovery programs. We're talking about how you can take a pain and you can turn it into a blessing. And we've got a question from Reggie. Reggie, thank you so much for calling in. What's your question?
How did Toria end up on opioids specifically? There's so many drugs out there. How does she end up on opioids?
Thank you for calling in, Reggie.
Hi, Reggie. Good morning, and thank you for calling in. Toria was a sexual assault victim, and she turned to. She originally had Ambien prescribed to her for the PTSD, and she also had benzos, and I don't know which ones, but the benzo classification of drugs that she was prescribed, and she started to become addicted as she took more and more to stop the night terrors and to be able to sleep and the panic attacks from the rape. It was a traumatic and a violent sexual assault, and her genitals were scratched up, and it was just a traumatic thing for her that she couldn't get over. And she eventually started to gain weight, and that led to depression, and she had anxiety, and she slowly led to self-medicating, marijuana, other things, just anything to numb the pain and not have to relive it, because she had flashbacks all throughout the day. And slowly she turned to heroin and other things. She had prescriptions first, but eventually she tried heroin and other forms, I believe smoking it. And eventually to the needle. So she was found dead, naked, with needles and white powder around her. And that's the little bit I know about that day.
Well, I'm so glad you were able to take that unbelievably difficult and painful situation and turn it into something so wonderful and positive for the rest of the world. We've got Tara Tucker, who's here from the Forsyth County Opioid Task Force, and it's just amazing to me that there are over 200 people that meet monthly and try to figure out how to work with this problem. Tara, please tell us a little bit about this.
Sure, Bill. So our task force started back in March of 2017, really saw that there were a lot of people doing things towards the opioid problem, but we all didn't know who was doing what. Obviously, EMS, we were being impacted every day by this issue. I came from a mental health and substance use background as a clinician, so felt it would be helpful to pull together our community partners and all of us try to figure out who's working on what, where the gaps were that we needed to address. And I think the partnerships have really made the work that we do a lot easier. We still have things to do, but we're able to work together to get people connected into treatment. We're able to do things like work on prevention programs, and then working now to build a recovery support system, because we have to help people too once they get the treatment that they need to stay clean.
The parents need help, and the people going through the problems, and then there are a lot of spouses and children that there's a stigma attached to somebody having a drug problem, and I don't know how we get a handle on that other than Christianity's built on the concept that God loves us, that he doesn't love us any more if we make all the right decisions, or love us any less for making the bad decisions, that the one important decision is whether or not we accept God's offer to become a child of his through Jesus Christ. And all the other problems, God promises to not only forgive, but forget, if we can just go to him and say, I need help, I was wrong, I made a mistake. And in my case, I was able to get down on my knees and say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And for 30 years, God's taken the problem that I dealt with for a long time off me. We've got to have a place to go to find help, though. And I know that there are lots of folks that if they just knew where to turn, they would try to find some help. How does somebody find help in Forsyth County if they've got, or they've got a loved one that's dealing with a drug problem?
So we've tried to actually do some things to simplify that. We actually have a mobile crisis team in the county that is staffed with behavioral health clinicians that can come out. And through the 911 system, we actually have community paramedics now. So those community paramedics are trained to help people get connected to the treatment resources that they need. So we've tried to make it easy. Everybody remembers 911. We do, you know, like I said, we have mobile crisis, and they actually work together so that, again, we get people the best help. We also have some support groups for family members through several of our churches here in the county. The support group PALS is Parents of Addicted Loved Ones. We have two of those. And then we also have a Solstice support group that was started with some of the task force members for those families that have suffered overdose death.
Now, make sure I understand this correctly. I don't actually have to be breathing, not breathing or bleeding to be able to call 911. I could just call up and say, I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what to do with my child, or my spouse is just going through all kinds of problems, and I need to find help for them. So even in situations like that, they can call 911 and find assistance.
That is correct.
Do you think that's the way it is in a lot of communities? I know that I would have thought that I would have to be in really serious care and need somebody to come with a light over the vehicle to call 911.
So I would say that's something unique in Forsyth County, and part of that because of this task force, you know, and all of us working together. We actually have family members on that task force. We have people that are in recovery, and that has been one of the things that we have heard, that it's difficult to know the resources and how to navigate them. So to me, we've tried to really simplify that and bring together the first responder world working with our behavioral health providers in the community, our law enforcement are partners in this. Also, if they get on a scene and that's what the help is needed, then they'll call and ask for our assistance with that to get people connected. So we really are all trying to work together, which is amazing, I think. And we're trying to educate our first responders more, too, about this issue and how to help, how to have that empathy and compassion that we know is needed.
Forsyth County's been a leader in putting Narcan in the cars, in the police cars, but then also in the hands of addicts. And Tara's team also goes into the community, and we have Narcan kits. We've had Narcan build kits days that we've gone out there as Forsyth County Opioid Task Force, and they will take them out to the community, and anyone that's using, they will give them a kit to keep with them, and if someone overdoses, that they have it. There's a lot of campaigns. We're one of the leaders. Forsyth County is a leader in the country to put this in all of the police cars and to walk around and try to get this in the hands of anyone. So if you're an addict, or you know an addict, or you love an addict, or someone that is struggling, get Narcan. You can get it free. You can get your county to put that in their police cars, because Narcan is what's going to save the life until we can get them and help them get through it and work through the issues that they need. But we're trying to tealize Trade Street, and teal is the color that we're trying to promote to make people aware and embrace those that we've lost and love and really come together. 72,000 plus people died in 2017 alone. And that is just an unbelievable number. And that number just came out last week, August 2018.
Now, that's people that have overdosed. That does or does not include suicides?
That is, I don't know the clarification on suicide, whether it's intentional or not, because you can't ever tell whether it's suicide intentional or not if it's an overdose and it had to do with opioids.
So, you also have lots and lots and lots of accidents that happen when somebody's owned these opioids, and those don't fall into those statistics either. So we're talking about the size of a medium-sized city disappearing every year from opioid overdoses. One of our problems is our words paint really improper pictures in our mind. Addict paints a picture that isn't really the picture that we should be thinking about. Kristen and I go out twice a year, and we talk to the homeless in our community, and we survey them and try to get them hooked up with resources in the community. And it's amazing to me how you can bump into somebody who's technically homeless, but you never would believe it. You could take them in the mall and walk through the mall and not get any. Share a little bit about what we should think of when we hear the word addict.
Well, Bill, the hard part is that for so many years, it's just been such a stigma about, oh, they're just an addict. I am in recovery. January will be 15 years clean. And the one thing that I don't like is how people that are trying their hardest to get help are treated. And so I'm so glad that they're finally being treated like human beings when they're trying to get help, instead of the wall, because that adds to that death rate. When they have gone as many places as they have gone to try to get help, I'm also a veteran. I have gone out there and met so many of my fellow veterans that are homeless. It is very sad to know that they feel that they cannot be comfortable or safe anywhere that they have offered for them, that we don't have a veteran community whether we build those little houses just so that they can call that home and they can do what they want there, whatever the case may be. But for those of us that have fought for our freedom, and that for them to be downtown walking around homeless, and it's sad for me.
Now, in my mind, it's almost impossible for anybody to believe that they're loved any more than they love themselves. It's almost impossible for somebody to believe that somebody else respects them any more than they respect themselves. That part of the problem is to take people that have this awful voice going on inside them and to love them so that they can grow in acceptance and believe they have an all-loving and caring God. And we want to challenge all of you to find a way to get plugged in and make a difference in the lives around you. And we're going to be back in a little bit. We hope you'll call in at 866-348-7884. Thank you. Well, we just had a wonderful show. We were off the air. We were sitting here talking about how when you've dealt with a drug addiction, when you've dealt with a problem and you've gone to God and you're working through, and then the people that you love and care about turn their back on you, that's painful and it's hurtful. I know there are a lot of people that get out of jail, that get out of treatment, and I tell them, the worst, scariest thing in the world's going to happen is you're going to be walking, or you're going to get a phone call, or someone's going to knock on the door, and they're going to ask a very dangerous question. They're going to say, "What are you doing?" And then you're going to say something that's the worst thing you can say. You're going to say nothing, and you're going to end up in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong friends doing the wrong thing. We in this audience need to look for hurting people, and we need to give them a hug, and we need to invite them to church, and we need to take them to lunch, and we need to love on them. And those people that are going through this problem need to find a time of refreshing and a light of the hill from Christians. And we have a caller calling in, Alicia. Alicia, thank you so much for calling in. What would you like to share? Oh, I'm sorry. We got disconnected. Susan, you want to share a little bit about what you think would have made a difference, that would have made your daughter's choices a little bit different?
Well, Toria, when she was getting clean, she had a tough time being re-accepted back into society. And sometimes we don't recognize when people are really trying hard to change their life and walk the right road, that they need us more than ever. They need someone that is going to hug them and forgive them. And Jesus says we're supposed to forgive 7 times 70. And sometimes we forget that. I forgot that. I have regrets. But I do know that I watched her struggle to be reaccepted back into society, and it hurts when someone's trying their best and they have made mistakes. But you know, if your child went in the pool when you told them don't go in without supervision, you don't hate them if they drown. They didn't obey you. Or if your child was told not to talk to strangers and they talked to a stranger and something tragic happened because an offender hurt them or killed them, we don't hate them for that, and they didn't listen. They disobeyed. You told them not to talk to a stranger. Well, we teach our children not to talk to or not to use drugs, but when they make a mistake, sometimes once is all it takes, and they're drowning, and we have to throw out that life raft. So what I'm trying to do by tealizing is kind of like the pink ribbon, making the teal drop, the image, the icon, the thing that you think about when you think about opioids. I'm trying to tealize the town and tealize the world, the globe, to make people come back and welcome these people. If we don't open our arms and bring them back into society, there's no hope for them to want to recover or try. Or if they do try, they'll relapse because they don't have the love and the support that they need. So pray for them, help them, and kind of like Race for the Cure, we're tealizing the town, and we want to be the pink ribbon of opioids by making everyone feel welcome back into society.
One of the things I love most about Kristen was all the hundreds and hundreds of people that have gotten through a program and had found success, but still needed somebody to talk to, that still needed somebody to hug them, that still needed to help them find new friends. And she just is awesome at helping people with that support network. Kristen, talk to folks about how they can help someone that's gone through a difficult time and is trying to map their way back to a successful life.
Well, Bill, I think the most important thing is giving somebody the love. I myself firmly believe that the large vast of our people that suffer with the disease of addiction have untreated trauma. And so we as Christians who are supposed to accept everybody like Jesus did us, if we would just reach out to these hurting people and show them the love and teach them to love themselves. It was these women that allowed me to love them until they could love themselves. Then when they would start getting better, that they could turn around and share that same love. It's a network. It's a recovery network. And so if we could just bring people in that are broken and make them feel a part of something, they will grasp onto that, and they will see that there is something else out there.
It will give them hope.
Yes.
I believe that when we're little, that we hear these awful things that are said to us and said to people around us, you're worthless, I don't understand mm-hmm. you, you'll mm-hmm. never amount to anything. Yeah, I hate you.
Yes.
Not necessarily to the child, but to the people the child loves. And that gets stuck in this tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And when difficult times come, that tape recorder comes on, and they think that that's truth. And I'm a firm believer that if you hear a voice that's not loving, that's not kind, a voice that makes you feel challenged about your future, makes you feel ashamed about your past, that's not God. That's yeah. not the Holy Spirit. And that Paul talks to us that we need to think about what's right, noble, and admirable,
yes.
and praiseworthy, and excellent. That we can take that thought. And you know, in my life, I've used, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and that I'm chosen and holy and dearly loved by God. And I can think that thought until I get to the point where I can start talking to God. And I can remember that my daddy in heaven loves me, and that my big brother Jesus is going to take my concern and sit down. But, you know, there are a lot of people that have no idea what I'm talking about. Half of the adults in the United States go to church less than 3 times a year. 25% of the adults that you come in contact with in the Bible Belt have never, ever been in a house of worship. 50% of the adults in our county do not have a church or denomination that they call their own. My point is that when we walk around every day, we're walking around a bunch of people that are hurting and are in pain, and you can't tell who's an addict. You can't tell who's almost an addict. And if we did a better job of asking people, how are you doing today? And just listening. If we were willing to talk to people and say, you know, I have a friend that's got a problem like that, or I know a place you can call, or have you thought about calling 911? And, you know, I'm going to pray about this week. Can I call you Saturday? I'd like to call you Saturday and see how your week is. And then call them Saturday and ask them, how's your week been? You've been on my mind and in my heart and in my prayers. And listen to them. And when they finish, say, you know, tomorrow I plan to meet with my very best friends. Can I take you with me? Or call them the night before your small group meets and say, tomorrow night I'm meeting with my best friends. I'd love for you to go with me. We could fill our churches. We could change the numbers. But people are hungry. Hungry for feeling accepted, mm-hmm. hungry for feeling loved. People are beating themselves up and feeling that they're worthless, and that needs to be fixed. That's why we became children of God. We are supposed to be ambassadors for Christ, and it's just wonderful to know about the Forsyth County Opioid Task Force. Can you share some of your successes?
And I think one of the things, our next meeting is October the 17th. We meet 12:30 to 2:30 at Public Health. And one of the things we're going to talk about is how the faith community can get involved in this and really help provide some of those support services, because it's sometimes something as simple as babysitting so somebody can go do their treatment group, or transportation to get to treatment. Those are two huge barriers. Sometimes it's just offering a meal or support, listening ear. So there's a lot of simple things that can be done. And I know beginning September the 26th, we're going to have a four-week series at Peace Haven Baptist Church to just talk about some of the issues around the opioid addiction. So as task force members, we're willing to come do those types of presentations to really provide the education, because I think education to this and breaking that stigma is really important. We've seen that through some of the panel discussions that we've had at some of the faith communities with all the partners there, you know, sharing some pieces of this, how it impacts the kids. I mean, you know, one of the big success stories, I would say, we just did a camp for kids impacted by the opioid epidemic. We see the numbers rising in DSS care, right? And so we know, like you mentioned, these things really do have an impact on those kids. This was our first one, so we set it a limit to 30 kids. We actually had kids on the waiting list. And then we partnered with City Lights Ministries, and some of our task force members really helped the planning. So the impact on these kids was huge. That last day, we had kids telling us they didn't want to leave, that it was the best experience they ever had. You know, and I sit back and think, look at all the stuff we do on vacation. Our camp is nothing compared to that kind of stuff. But it was huge because those kids had attention. They had somebody to listen to them, you know, and really to try to teach them some new skills. There's other ways than drugs to cope with the difficult things that you deal with in life.
They don't get to go to vacation like some of us do. It's really sad that some of these children have never been on a vacation. They don't know what it's like. I had the luxury and opportunity to work with them and go to the camp and be a part of the planning from day one with Teal Drops. And Teal Drops went with vision boards, and we gave them the opportunity. It's teardrop-shaped foam boards. We gave them the opportunity either to make a memory board in memory of someone they lost to opioids or overdose, or to make a vision board of their own life or what they'd like to see in their future. And I believe every single one of them chose to do a memory board, and that was just astounding.
We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a story, if you know a support group that's done an extremely good job, 866-348-7884, 866-348-7884. Please keep the station and Robbie in your prayers, and we hope you'll be here when we come back from the message. Well, we want to thank you so much for tuning in. Keep learning really neat new things. We've got a new program through the Behavioral Health Center, an urgent care, where folks that instead of going to the emergency room, we're looking after my wife's stepfather. We brought him down from Virginia, and he's got dementia, and we had to take him to the emergency room, which was a really bizarre experience for that very, very nice. I mean, Forsyth Emergency Room, the staff was just absolutely spectacular. But we could have taken him and gotten him an ice cream cone and accomplished about as much as we did. So I would love to know more about this behavioral health emergency care. Tara, help me understand this.
Sure. So what we've learned is taking people to the emergency room, they are focused on medical emergencies, right? So people have mental health and substance use issues, don't necessarily get their needs met there, and they're stuck waiting there for hours because, of course, that cardiac patient goes in front of them, right, based on priority. So with the behavioral health urgent care, it is a place that you can walk into 24/7, and they can actually do an assessment and determine what services you need and link you with those services. In addition, they actually have what we call 23-hour observation chairs, so they can keep you there for 23 hours. And sometimes you just need to be removed from the situation and calm down and have somebody to listen, right, that can be there for you and monitor you, make sure that you're okay. And that's reassuring to people, and then getting the help. So the behavioral health world is a lot harder to navigate than the medical world, I feel like. So we are one of two counties in the state to actually have a behavioral health urgent care. So I definitely would encourage people to use that service that Daymark has provided. Daymark also does our mobile crisis. And then they actually have facility-based crisis centers from there. They can transfer people where they can stay for 7 days. And maybe it's withdrawal and maybe it's a mental health issue. They need a little longer inpatient. But helping people get connected to the right care at the right time is very important. We know that from now, the 911 world.
There's actually a physician overseeing it on the site. It's not just PAs or...
So there are some mid-levels there to help manage that. There is a medical director that oversees it and is available to them 24/7. So,
Bill, they have peer support specialists there. They have clinicians there. I think there's a nurse there, and they do have somebody that is and can sign off on anything that's medical or if they need to send them to somewhere. They have done an amazing job. They got a vehicle, so if the case is this person's ready and they need to go somewhere, they can call. They can physically will drive them to the treatment facility if they accept them. It's just amazing. And so anybody can go. They don't have to have an ambulance take them. They can walk in.
Well, I want to get back to that. I've got a couple questions, but Harry is kind enough to call in and wants to share with us. It says success story. I love the sound of that. Welcome, Harry.
Terry, maybe?
Okay, Carrie.
Terry.
We will.
It's Terry with the T.
Terry, okay.
I've been a paramedic for 23 years, and I've been in EMS for 28. And I think what Tara and you ladies are doing is wonderful. Because most of the time, you know, we pick up an overdose or somebody who's intoxicated, we take them to the hospital, we drop them off, we forget about them. And to me, that is not what we're in this for. You know, that's not good patient care. So I'm glad somebody's finally doing something, and we've actually brought some of that information back to my agency.
Thank you for what you're doing.
The other reason I'm calling is suicide among EMS has been a big, big stigma. You know, the depression, the anxiety, the suicidal ideations. I have attempted twice. The last time was the worst. And, you know, I got in the shower to go to work, and the next thing I remember is I wake up in a Catholic church at an altar with a gun. And, you know, I walk out, all the cops are there, and the only thing I think is I haven't been to church since I was 18, and I'm 47. And I think God had a plan for me. That's why he brought me there, and that's what stopped me from doing what I was going to do.
Thank God. He is amazing.
Well, we appreciate you calling and sharing. Evidently, that it worked out very well.
Well, it has. He's God has put people in my path that are helping me to raise awareness among, you know, my fellow coworkers, and we're actually starting to work on a Plans for Community Outreach program.
Well, we hope
there was a reason I didn't pull that trigger at that church that morning.
Well, part of the whole purpose of this show is to encourage people in our listening audience to pray that wonderful changes happen in our community, and that we find ways to make a difference in the lives of others. And it's wonderful to know that things are going on in Forsyth County that we don't know about. And that, where are you located?
I'll just say South Carolina.
South Carolina. So yeah, there are opportunities for all of us to find a way to make a difference in our life. And assuming that most of the people listening to this network have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, it's important that we share that with folks, that we are a life preserver, that we're not some leaky rescue raft bobbing up and down, that we're a Coast Guard cutter, that we're sent out by Jesus to make a difference in the lives of others. And that's as simple as looking over and seeing somebody that needs a hug. It's as simple as asking someone if they'd like to have lunch. It is finding an opportunity to plug somebody we know that's going through a difficult time into resources that we are aware of, and we should find out what resources are available. One of the things I like to do is I've got a flyer that's got the resources available in our area, and I get to add some new ones that I didn't know about too. And instead of handing somebody money, hand them a coupon for a restaurant, a Bible, and a resource list of what's available in the area. What do you do to make a difference in the lives of those that God puts in your path? It's amazing the things that we can do, and it's amazing that one person can take an awful, difficult situation, and they can just allow it to crush them, and somebody else can find teardrops. And is there anything else, Susan, that you'd like to share? You've got some events that we'd love to highlight.
Yes, we're tealizing Trade Street in Winston-Salem on September 7th. Come out, wear your teal to support people that you know in active addiction, in recovery, and for those that we have lost to the opioid epidemic. We could also use your help in donations. Go to tealdrops.org to donate to help save lives. And we also have an event in Washington, D.C. at the National Mall on September 12th, 2018. That is a Wednesday afternoon. We'll be there from 11 to 3, and we have a wonderful lineup. So please show your support. And if you can't be there, please wear teal on September 12th and September 7th in support of all those in recovery and active addiction. They need our support. They need to know that we love them and we're accepting them back into our communities.
Now remember, we've got a webpage, kingdompursuits.com, and there's a lot of information on that. And we've got a Facebook page that you can do a search for Kingdom Pursuits. And we'd love for you to friend us, and we'd love for you to share your stories on the page, and you can access some information there. Kristen, you're working with a new project. Would you like to share a little bit more information on it?
Well, I am. I'm working with Phoenix Rising, which is a nonprofit as well that is trying to conquer and help anybody that's facing this opioid crisis and with addiction, period. I am also the co-chair of the Forsyth County Reentry Council. I don't want to forget my people that are coming out of incarceration. They find themselves having the same problems as the homeless do, as the people that have an addiction, that mental illness. They have a problem getting services, and so the Reentry Council is doing everything that we can to help them with housing, help them with clothing, help them with getting services that they need when they get out, so that they don't have to be walking around on the streets homeless or having an addiction after they've gone through their whatever they've gone through in their incarceration. So I'm pumped about that as well. It's really, we had our first kickoff a few months ago, and we've just well on our way to having putting together some services that we're hoping will make the biggest impact for our people coming out of incarceration.
You know, there are lots of folks locked up, and there are lots of folks locked up for a variety of reasons. But whatever reason they were locked up, they're going to get out. And I don't know about you, but if they get out, I don't want them to go back in. That's an expensive hotel for me to have to pay to keep them in. Well, if they get out and they've got the stigma attached to them, if they get out and they don't have a way to earn some money to get a meal, if they get out and they don't have any resources or friends, then they're going to go back in that really expensive hotel that we're all having to pay for. So what I'm saying to you is look in your communities and see if there's a faith-based program in your county that helps people. We've got something called Project Reentry that helps people find jobs. We've got all kinds of different networks set up in our county that are absolutely spectacular. One of them is at the Goodwill, hooked up with our community college, and people can go there, and there are about 12 different careers they can study. One of them is welding and nursing and truck driving.
Organ operator.
And plumbing and heating and air conditioning. And they walk out with the same paper they would if they went to the community college. We need to work together as a community, as a faith community, as believers of Jesus Christ, and to help the less fortunate get plugged back into the community. So please pray for this station. Please pray for these wonderful ladies and the organizations that they're a part of. And we hope you have a wonderful week, that you see Christ and that you experience God in a deeper and richer way than ever before. Thank you for tuning in.